Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today, we're talking about episode 21 of Amnesty. I'm just going to say right off the bat that I just finished the episode like 5 minutes ago.
Wait, like your first run through?
Yeah.
Wow.
I always wait until we're going to record to listen. And well, so usually I listen in like the 2 days before, but since we're recording a little early this week, I just like listened during my lunch break and then when I got home.
I don't know how you could have resisted. Like last night.
I don't know.
Like last night, I was physically at a concert. I saw Kelly Clarkson. It was really cool.
What the fuck? Wow, dude, cool.
Yeah, she's like really good.
And that's awesome.
It was like super nostalgic. But like as soon as I got home, I like got into my pajamas and I like listened to the episode, but I only listened to like maybe 10 minutes and then I fell asleep. But but it was so worth it.
I don't know. I figured that like if the closer I listen to the episode, the fresher it'll be in my mind. And
that is
also
very true.
I'm lazy and don't want to listen to it more than once usually.
Yeah.
Although the last, I actually love the Lunar Interlude and did end up listening to it twice. Although that's probably because we messed up the recording and had to do it a second time.
I listened to my first run through on my way to work because, sadly, an episode is kind of as long as my commute is in the morning.
Yeah, same, actually.
Yeah. California.
Hey!
But then, on my way home, I did not listen to it. But, like, as soon as I got home, I listened to it again, but at 1.2 speed. So, like, an hour and a half episode only took
smart.
Me, like, an hour-ish to listen to.
It took me forever to listen to this episode because I was so tired that, like, I kept zoning out and having to rewind because I wanted to, like, actually pay attention to what was happening.
That happens to me, too. I hear
the worst.
You.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, as I was saying, just finished the episode. I really like Hollis so far, even though I have no idea how to spell their name. But they seem like a badass, so I'm into that.
Well, Hollis is a cool name. And
yeah, how
I
do
know,
you spell that?
I like Holly, but instead of a Y, it's an I-S.
Oh, I put an H-O-L-L-A-C-S, like Horace.
Wow.
And apparently I was right, because the first, the like sidebar Google response is a person named Hollis Shaw, who was a coloratura soprano who performed on old-time radio and on the stage.
Hella
Hollis Shaw.
Cool. Okay, well, remind me at the end of this to add the Adventure Zone Twitter so we can get some clarification.
Yeah, I think it's a I'm guessing it's Hollis like this. It sounds like kind of a cool old-timey name.
That it's a really cool name. Like a lot of times Adventure Zone, they'll pick NPC names because of a listener. But this one, I think Griffin was just straight up like, no, I needed a name and this is the
Hollis
name I chose.
Okay.
I was going to go through the episode like chronologically, but we can just straight up talk about Hollis because I think it's such an interesting character that it warrants priority.
Well, I mean, we could jump back to the beginning of the episode.
That's true. Hollis is there too, so that works out. So something I needed kind of clarified. I think I got the answer by the end of it, but I just want to confirm my timeline of the events. So the giant wasps, God, what are their names? Yellow Jackets?
The Hornets?
Fuck, okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, so the Hornets were chilling at their nest, and then this person walks in as a human, right? They walk in as a hooded blonde figure.
Yes. Okay, now we're definitely jumping all over the episode, which is by me.
Yeah. I want to confirm the like how the incident because I had to listen to
that
it.
That makes sense.
Okay, I had to rewind and listen to it a couple times. I love Griffin's narration.
Yeah, so did I.
but when they cut to I think it was when they like shifted the point of view from Hollis looking at the monster to the audience being outside and witnessing like bodies crash through the window. Like that kind of threw me off because I was like, wait, what? But
my theory is kind of that I think Griffin, he wants to set the scene like this, but he also doesn't want to take too much time away from the players and like being in the game. And so he rushes through scenes like this. I feel like if he talked a little slower, it would be easier to process.
Yeah.
But he's also, he doesn't want it to take any longer than it has to. So it's kind of like a weird trade-off thing.
Yeah.
That's my guess about it.
I think he did fantastically. Like, he painted the scene really well. But you're right. Like, I had to listen to it a couple times just so I could understand what was going on. So
Especially because later Mama was like, oh, yeah, and it was weird that this creature dragged someone back into the woods. And I'm like, wait, did that happen?
Exactly,
and I had to go back and listen, like, a third time trying to figure it out.
Because I wasn't sure. Because, okay, so the POV shifts, and then the body flings out the window, and then Keith gets trampled as people try to vacate the bar. And then Hollis grabs a bat from above the bar, and then we don't see their, like, what happens. I assume that maybe they, like, fight off the beast or something, right?
No, because they were chasing the beast into the woods on motorcycle.
Yes.
So that cut was a little confusing, I thought. You're right about, like, this weird, like, a kind of weird scene transition. But I think what happened is that, like, the shit goes down, Hollis grabs the bat and then hops on their motorcycle and then is, like, going into the woods chasing after the perpetrator.
Okay, yeah. I guess maybe that's when it should have been implied that they were dragging along a body or something.
I guess so. So I'm trying to figure out, Griffin in the narration said that the person was holding a body of a hornet that was too mangled to recognize.
Yeah.
And
their claws or something.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out if that's who got taken.
Yes.
Like the corpse.
Yeah.
And they take the body into the woods. Hollis is giving chase on their bike and then gets to the clearing where the gate is. And then, like, Hollis is just like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. And then they turn around and leave.
Yeah.
Was it implied in that scene that the abomination or sylph, it's not clear, went through the gate?
I thought I thought maybe something like that. I didn't think with the corpse, but I thought maybe like they were just seeking refuge and they jumped back through the gate. But
okay, yeah. Okay, good. I'm just confirming that that's implied. Yeah. Because this is really interesting because I don't think any abomination so far has gone back through the gate.
No.
And I was wondering, are they able to do that? But I mean, when we get to the end of the episode, everybody's suspecting like it turns out, like, oh, is this a vampire attack? Like, is it Danny? You know, I mean, like, you know, there's kind of, like, some levels of, like, is Danny actually a suspect or... Yeah,
I was going to get to this later, but I would love if there was, like, a, who, me? It wasn't me. Like, that kind of, like, a framed, who framed Roger Rabbit kind of thing, where we think, oh, it's Danny, all this evidence is mounting to Danny, but then it's not. Like...
I'm sure, like, the fact that... Everybody already, like, is, like, side-eyeing Danny by the end of the first episode of this chapter makes me think that it has to be a red herring. It's not actually Danny.
Oh, yeah, probably.
But the evidence points to it. The perpetrator was described as a small blonde woman.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people had a big chomp in the neck, which at first I was thinking... I was kind of thinking werewolf at first
for some
reason.
I was totally thinking werewolf.
Good. I'm glad it was. We're on the same page on this whole thing then.
Because I think they described the hand, but then they said claw. And I'm like, well, vampires don't have claws, clearly. So, like, the fact that Bevan couldn't describe it as anything more than, like, a weird creature with big claws and, like, bloody face. Like, it didn't immediately... Like, I feel like a werewolf is kind of iconic. If it was a werewolf, you might have said, like, oh, it had, like, wolfy ears and a tail or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
If it is, if this human, this blonde, small human person kind of appearing thing turns out to be the abomination, that's kind of the first time that an abomination has taken up the appearance of, like, a straight-up human.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things about this because that hasn't happened so far. Although we do know that the Gosling Watch worked on Billy, who is ostensibly an abomination.
That is true. Maybe this hood is like an item like that.
Oh fuck! I didn't even think about that. Like the hoodie is the disguise item, like the enchanted item. Oh, that's so smart.
How would a bomb bomb have gotten a disguise item?
Well, if Billy is a bomb bomb and Billy could wear one, then it might be... I don't know. And, yeah, that's the other thing is, like, when it seemed like the abomination went through the gate afterward, I'm like, that's weird. That hasn't happened before. But if it's a sylph, like, Danny said that she is a vampire, right?
Yes, yes.
And it kind of seems like there's some sylphs that are animals that got turned into sylphs by wandering over there, and then there's some sylphs that are like the native sylvan people.
Yeah.
And I kind of got the sense that Danny and like, if there are other vampires, the other vampires are like native sylphs. So I definitely would buy that there might be another vampire person running around perpetrating whatever acts are happening.
Yeah. What if, and this is completely out of like left field, but like what if, how did the sylphs that live in Amnesty Hotel, what did they do to get banished from Sylvain? Because we don't know that. If it's that easy to have, to just give a sylph a piece of some kind of thing that disguises them as a human, and if bomb-bombs can do that, then were, like, these refugees, were they bomb-bombs? Or were they sylphs?
I don't think, if they were abominations, unless that turns out to be the big twist, I'm sure that would have come up before. Like, the way Mama reacted to Billy is kind of like they're the bad guys, and yet she's running this hotel that is sheltering all of these sylphs, right?
Yeah, so, that's true.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of weird things about this, because sylphs can also go feral.
Mm-hmm.
So is it possible that this is a sylph that has gone feral and not like a regular old abomination? And of course, my running pet theory, are the abominations just feral sylphs?
Yeah. For clarification, is that to say that they've been taken over by the Scourge God? What are their
names? Quell.
The Quell. Quell?
The Quell is the thing that is inhabiting Thacker and is the reaction to Sylvain, the heart of Sylvain being damaged. Yeah. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, because they made it seem like when Danny and Aubrey talked about this before, it seemed like if the sylphs don't regularly get from Sylvain. Yeah, so that's why they all go in the hot spring. Yeah. Because if they don't, they'll go feral.
That's right. We haven't talked about that in a very long time.
I know. And so that's one weird factor, but on the other hand, like, I don't know, we don't know what going feral means in this case, but in my mind, it sounds like, you know, going wild or, like, turning kind of vicious, like, kind of maybe going, like, temporarily insane or something.
Oh, yeah, I hear you, Zootopia, I hear you, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, however, Jake Kulice, when he went to visit the hornets that were injured at the hospital, he specifically said, like, I think the attacks were with intent.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we don't know what feral means exactly, but I wouldn't imagine a sylph that had gone feral would be like doing a targeted attack. Like, purposely. I don't know what I don't know what with intent means. Also, does it mean that whoever this person was targeting the hornets on purpose because they have some kind of grudge?
Yeah, like that's what it certainly appears to be. Part of me was also thinking, well, like, what if this isn't even a bomb-bomb? What if this is just a resident going feral?
That's almost like, what it seems like. And,
If they choose their target, you know?
Yeah, and also, after everything that happened with the goat people, I feel like the line between the sylphs and the abominations continues to get smaller.
Yeah.
Or thinner.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that we will have to explore pretty soon in the show. Yeah. Like, not us, you and me, because we're just listening, but I think the content of the show is going to have to address that, like, thinning line at some point.
Yeah. Especially, as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, I'm totally in this camp. That this isn't a bomb-bomb, it's just, like, a sylph that is causing chaos.
Yeah.
Is because we've never seen a bomb-bomb take a human kind of form. And so even though they kind of prefaced with Mama and Barclay are concerned because the bomb-bombs seem to be evolving, I'm kind of just like, well, what if it's not a bomb-bomb? Like,
yeah, it's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of Billy, a couple of things got clarified at the beginning of the episode that I was really happy with.
Yeah.
They said, because this is stuff we talked about in the last episode, like, well, this is just gone. But yes, Billy is settled and fitting in at Amnesty Lodge, allegedly. Thank God.
Yeah.
And also, Aubrey confirmed that, yes, she did tell Mama about touching the crystal, which is something else that I can't remember if we talked about it last episode, but that's something that I was wondering about.
Yeah.
And yes, confirmed. And also, Griffin clarified something that I hadn't been sure about, which was that, like, when Justin does his weird role at the beginning of each chapter to figure out his vision, the vision isn't just less clear or less accurate if he rolls bad. Like, the vision becomes worse. What happens like Justin's role determines the content of the vision and the future, not yeah. just like how good, not just like the quality of the vision.
Yeah.
Which you know, I find is, yeah.
The funny thing is, I took the other side of this observation. I took it to, my observation was, oh, so if he rolled better, then he would have gotten more details.
I don't think so. I mean, because that's what I thought before. Like, the way Griffin described it in this episode, maybe I'm wrong. This is this classic, me and you listen to the exact same fucking audio and somehow interpret it in two different ways.
Well, that's what makes it fun. Okay, should I go listen for it? I
mean, Do you want to? You could.
Just keep the thing rolling. I'll call you back in a second.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm really good at like finding things in an episode.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I got it. So nice. The fun thing is we're both right. Because Travis says that thing about like, well, if he rolled a 12, would he just see himself like happening in a lazy river, you know?
Yeah.
And Griffin clarifies that, well, when you roll bad, he has to do a hard move. But also when you roll good, you get more information. So
interesting. Okay, yeah, so I guess it is both right. then. Nice. Yeah. So synergy. I mean,
the bad thing that happens in the future that Duck is privy to, there's a couple of different bad things. And it could be something that's not obvious. And that's like right, I really want them to do the Adventure Zone. Because I want to know, like, what part of the things that are happening are the hard moves, you know?
Yeah, this is fucking wild because Justin rolled bad, Duck had a meteor vision. Does this mean that if Justin had rolled better, Minerva would not be gone?
Yeah, exactly.
That's insane. That's, like, a huge plot point.
It's huge. It changed his whole character. It's huge.
Oh, but I love the way, I love it. I love the way it turned out. And that's one of the cool things about tabletop RPGs is that sometimes like things that happen by chance end up really meaningful on accident and just works out really good.
Yeah.
But damn, that's a big thing to have happened as a result of his shitty roll. And so they rolled so bad this session too. Everyone rolled like shit.
I feel like it's so easy to roll bad in this game. It's just it really makes you enjoy when you don't roll bad, but you just roll bad so often.
On the opposite end, there are definitely episodes where Griffin's like, Jesus Christ, you guys are rolling so good this episode. Yeah. You know, I think it like comes and goes.
When it rains, it pours.
Yep.
Oh, God. That's a good expression. I was going to say something else, but now I can't remember. I remembered.
Yeah.
when they first started doing the amnesty, like, arc, they were trying to describe Monster of the Week, and Griffin described it as, like, it's really the things that you roll, every roll is instrumental, because either something really good happens and you progress the storyline, or even if you roll poorly, it, like, the storyline still progresses. You still gain something. Like, they gain experience and, you know, I kind of wish we could represent how they're leveling up just so that we can kind of appreciate all of their bad roles a little bit more.
Yeah, wouldn't they love to see...
Like I really want to see their character sheets.
Love to see like a decision tree of like every note at which something crazy happens. Like I feel like every time we talk about like, oh, Griffin, what happened to Pigeon? Or like whenever we complain about stuff that didn't get explored enough, I feel really bad because it's like, Griffin, I don't want to shit on you because you're doing a fucking good job. Like I cannot thinking about the kind of stuff that's happened in this campaign just based off of like randomness, like chance rolls and stuff, and like how good he is at thinking on his feet and integrating everything. Like, I mean, he's a professional performer, and I'm hoping I like don't know what their finances are specifically, but I can't express enough how much I hope the McElroys are making a fucking buttload of money off of all their properties because, completely. I love them and I want them to have this. But like, playing a game, especially when you have this kind of audience. And playing a game that's this high, like it becomes a really high stakes game because like you're trying to maintain your listenership, and you're making money off of it. Like this is like their livelihood, and you know, in balance, Griffin did a lot of railroading, and like again, I'm gonna support him through that. I don't think it was a bad thing. You know,
Yeah.
Even though sometimes you could see the players getting frustrated, and sometimes like that was like the trade-off, but I think he made a really beautiful story that I will love and cherish forever. But he's also doing a really good job letting it be a little more like up to chance in Amnesty, it seems like. And it's like, I am the dungeon master in our game, and I can only compare myself and my other friends who have DM'd before to Griffin and go like, Jesus Christ, like... I have a question for you, Chelsea.
Yeah.
What do you think about the eyeball rift that Ned saw?
I immediately thought of Doctor Who.
I've never seen... That's a lie. I have seen the first 12 episodes ever of Doctor Who. Like, the original Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah, no, God. I've only ever watched, like, a little bit of 9, all of 10, and all of 11, and, like, none of 12, and, like, some of 13. so, like...
One is it good? First... Do you like it? Do you like Doctor Who?
Yeah, I love Doctor Who. Go ahead. You go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, well, one of the, like, first storylines in the 11th Doctor is one of the characters, Amy, sees a crack, like, on her bedroom wall, and she's like, that crack's always been there. I don't know. I never noticed it. I never thought it was a big deal. But then they come to find that it's, like, a rift into a different dimension, and she just never noticed. Creepy. Like, yeah, and it was just there and, like, watching her. And, like, it was an eye that was just... It was actually,
nice and creepy. Whoa.
So I was like, oh, that's Doctor Who. in the context...
Okay, well, I mean, for all I know, this might be a handy reference to Doctor Who. I think the boys are fans.
I know Travis is, because he has, like, a fan cast of Doctor Who when they were rewatching the 10th Doctor.
Yeah.
I can only assume that, you know... Griffin wears glasses. He's probably nerdy. He probably knows a little bit about Doctor Who. Like, it wouldn't be an unfair guess, I guess. I want to, just real quick, I just want to give praise to Duck and how, even being mundane, he still lies bad. But now he has, like, a good approach, as long as Aubrey is around. God, I call her Aubrey... Audrey. No, God.
It's Aubrey. You were right.
I doubted myself for no reason.
No, it was Aubrey. Yeah.
I thought it was really cute that he had, like, his alibi for...
I know, it's really good.
It was really good. What do you make of the Hornets teaming up with the Pine Guard?
I love it. And, I mean, that's not exactly what Hollis said was going to happen. but I want them to team up really bad.
Yeah.
I feel like... we've covered all of the, like, plot stuff. The rest of my notes is just cute things that I liked.
This is the end of my notes. I mostly asked you so that I could answer.
Oh, please. Please, Chelsea.
Well, let's hear it. That whole setup, it happened while they were talking to Mama and Barclay in the cellar, right? Like, Mama was there. She was talking with them. So Hollis coming up and being like, hey, so I know everything about your monster business.
I know, that was fucking like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Well, now Mama knows
keep
that they
you
know.
Blabbermouth, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just kind of like...
That was a hard move, right?
It must have been a hard move.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know which hard move this counts. Like, I can't keep track of how many they've earned and how many Griffin has used.
Yeah, if I were a dedicated podcaster, while I was doing my re-listen, I would be drawing out a big decision tree map and trying to figure this out.
This isn't that podcast. We are not those people.
This is what the Reddit is for. I don't think we're serving that exact role in the, like, that exact niche in the fandom. All right, I'm just going to go through several things that I thought were interesting or of note, or cute. I want to talk actually briefly about Duck's vision, which was of a beam of light shooting out of the telescope into the sky. Mm-hmm. Which, like, when I heard that, I was like, oh, they're definitely signaling aliens. And that's actually my question about the eye rift. And I'm wondering, like, because, like, the tree that could change time in the last chapter, that's a pretty weird abomination with a pretty weird power.
Yeah.
Is the eyeball rift another abomination? Or...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Is it an alien? Is it an extra-dimensional being? Like, the possibilities are endless in this campaign.
Well,
so,
if Sylvain is an alien planet, it could be both.
Yeah, it could be both. That's true. And that's why I found I'm very curious about this beam of light that shoots out of the telescope. By the way, I don't know, like, radio telescopes are not, like, a big telescope like a lens, like a little telescope. They're, like, giant satellite dishes, sometimes built into big bays. Just, like, I want to establish a baseline, because, like, I mean, the people listening to this podcast are probably nerds, so they probably know about this kind of thing, but just in case.
Yeah. So, something that we haven't talked about in a really long time, that they only talked about really in the, like, setup episode, is that, like, the whole issue about Kepler and the Monongahela Forest is it's a radio silence zone, and, like, there are no cell towers and there's no nothing going on.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, like, well, what if part of it is because there's so much wacky, spooky shit in the air that, like, it interferes with it or whatever.
That's
like,
possible.
What if this radio telescope is part of that, you know?
Interesting.
Like, they haven't touched on that in a really long time, but, like, what if there's another group also kind of looking and poking around and, like, studying Sylvain, but they don't know it as Sylvain. They only know it as, like, this exotic planet X375 whatever.
Oh, that's totally possible.
Yeah, like, really, how meta, like, would that be?
Yeah, it would be good. I really like that aspect of this campaign and this kind of, like, the tropes that go into Monster of the Week. This, like, government poking around sort of trope.
Yeah. I like that Agent Stern is around. Like, the government is tangibly there.
Yeah.
But it's just they're so unaware.
I wish he would have more of a role, and I'm wondering if Griffin is waiting for the right hard move to come along where Agent Stern becomes a real obstacle. But in the meantime, I'm like, the image of him obsessively searching for signs of Bigfoot with all these monsters right under his nose is like, it continues to amuse me. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot too. But what if
it's super good.
What if this is his turn? Like, I expect in the next episode, they're going to go investigate where they track the monster to before they turned around. And, like, what if, because they said Agent Stern was, like, poking around in the forest.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Like, they could run into him and he could be like, this is it, you guys, this is Bigfoot. And, like, Barclay can shift uncomfortably and it can be a whole thing. If I get this scene in the next episode, Griffin, thank you. You are welcome. I just wrote it for you.
Oh, speaking of scenes that we're writing for them, it sounds like Ned doesn't want to take.
Oh.
That's a big deal that we kind of glazed over, but Ned doesn't want to take.
They glazed over it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, so, okay, yeah, we're just following down the chain of command. But, doesn't want to take Boyd's offer, I guess.
He is reluctant to, but he did also say that he cased the droid already.
Well, that's true. Another really good mental image is, I guess they retconned this, so it didn't happen, but him cruising around in his very obvious surveillance vehicle.
Yeah. And Mama's just like, why are you just doing, like, donuts side in my eye,
like,
parking
drinking
lot?
Her coffee on the porch or something, just going, like, shaking her head.
What a great image. What a great image.
I love the idea of Aubrey being the assistant manager at the lodge. Also, like, lie or not, it's hilarious. If it's her lying, it's hilarious. If it's also kind of true by accident,
I feel
great.
Like, that's so in her character that when she attaches herself to a place and to people that she would naturally want to help out.
Yeah, it's really good.
That totally fits her character.
I also, like, Dewey's hilarious.
He was squeaky.
Yeah, extra squeaky and extra funny in this episode. And it's also really cute that he's a fan of Saturday Night Dead. I thought that was a very funny off-the-cuff detail.
Yeah.
That is canon forever. Thank you, Griffin. Also, Jake Kulice, I noticed that he's, like, totally lost his surfer accent. It's just, like, one of Griffin's, like, grumbly voices at this point.
That's a
There's
good way
no
of
like
putting it.
No problem, mama, you know, like, that's gone. It's just
Well, this could be Jake Kulice, like, being it's like he was sobered, like, cuz his friends were potentially
meme. Oh my god,
meme.
That's such an adorable idea that you've just like are you talking about, like, the Jake Kulice, like, cool snowboarder guy persona is part of his human disguise, and it was, like, something that he was putting on?
Maybe.
Because that's adorable.
Yeah. Like, maybe, because, you know, like, when you go to a new place and people don't really know you and you get to reinvent yourself, like...
I think my last note is just that Griffin called him, during the money zone, during the ad read, Griffin called himself, your dungeon master, your best friend, and your fungin master?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he said that before.
He has, I think.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
he like didn't see I'm pretty sure he's used that one before, and I'm pretty sure he didn't realize it at the time that he was recording it, because he sounded like, oh, I've got a fun new name that I just pulled out.
Do you have any more notes?
I think that's it, finally. Oh. Oh, and also Griffin confirmed that Keith did not. Oh no, we know that from the end of the episode too.
Which,
that's not
which,
important.
Which?
Keith isn't dead.
Oh, yeah, no, Keith's alive. But Keith hella spilled the beans. And now the beans are in a bowl in front of Mama, and Mama's about to eat it all up. Like,
I don't know what Mama's going to do. I mean, it's kind of like, what can she do? Cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
They want to help. I didn't mean to, like, go straight on from your question about, like, ooh, what do you think about them teaming up? Because what I think is that I love the fucking trope of people who were enemies having to, like,
I have that note in my notes as well.
Yes, yes.
I think that Mama is going to go about it and tell them only as much as they need to know to solve this single mystery. Like, I don't think she's going to commission them long term. Except the way that they were describing Hollis's, like, alertness to what was going on in the opening scene kind of made it seem like he has kind of, like, a knack for...
Yeah, this is it. This is perfect. Okay, so remember when the original Keith hard move happened and I think I was like, oh yeah, Pigeon, Keith, and Billy will be the junior Pine Guard.
Dude,
Scratch Keith.
It's gonna be
Pigeon,
Hollis.
Billy, and Hollis. Junior Pine Guard. It's gonna be amazing.
Yeah. I was expecting them to rumble, but they were just straight up like, nah, like one of our own got hurt. We're gonna go, you know, beat some shit up monsters and stuff, you know?
Yeah, super good. One thing that I also wasn't sure about during the intro was, like, the word lieutenant was used, but the way it was used, I couldn't tell if Griffin was talking about Hollis or Keith. But Keith is, like, the leader of the Hornets, right?
No, other way around.
Is it? Okay, it is the other way around then. Okay, because I was like, I thought Keith was the leader, and I'm like, I cannot believe fucking Hollis is riding up in the front of the group, being the badass, and Keith is, like, totally whipped, riding, like, side saddle. Oh, no, Aubrey's here. What am I going to do?
It's, you know, more, like, fun thinking of it like that.
Keith Hollis is fucking taking charge. I love them. They're excellent.
Keith is the, I guess, like, the lieutenant, and then Hollis is, like, the general.
Oh, I'm stupid. That's right. That's what lieutenant means, huh? Yeah. It's not.
The only reason why I know the difference is because of Hamilton. Like, that's the only reason.
You know, I still haven't listened to
Hamilton.
Oh,
my God.
My problem is, and I almost went, my aunt wanted to get tickets, but, well, they're in, like, Los Angeles, but she couldn't get them, and they're also $200.
You go ahead.
I have this thing where it's like, I know this is stupid, but I don't want to listen to, like, the soundtrack to a musical without being able to, like, see the musical being performed. It feels like a spoiler or something, even though I don't know when I'm going to see it performed at this point. Like, maybe never.
The thing about Hamilton is it's one of those soundtracks where it you listen to it like a podcast. Like, every song
is
kind of like an episode.
Yeah, it's like an opera, right? Basically.
Yeah, like the narrative moves because of the music.
So, I want to talk about this, actually, because I heard Hamilton described as a hip-hopera, which would only be the case if there was no spoken dialogue and it was all raps.
I actually don't know that there is spoken dialogue.
Fuck! I thought there was. That would make it, an actual hip-hopera. Oh, my God. Maybe I could just fucking listen
you
to
could
it. I thought I would be missing
you
out.
You could 100,000% just listen to... I'm going to probably listen to the soundtrack now, because now it's,
because,
like,
we talked about it?
Now, because... Yeah, like, I've only ever seen Hamilton once, obviously. but, like, that one time... kind of paled in comparison to what I had envisioned in my head, only because there weren't, like, actual cannons on the stage, you know?
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
Definitely the soundtrack, and Lin-Manuel Miranda has talked about this a couple times, where he grew up on like, West Side Story and Man of La Mancha and Les Mis, where the soundtracks for those things, the music also drove the story. There wasn't a whole lot of spoken dialogue.
Yeah, because Les Mis is an opera, right? Mm-hmm. Or no?
It was based on an opera.
Okay, that's right, it is an opera.
I think the musical itself is formatted very closely to it, but...
Okay, good.
Yeah, like, there's very little spoken word. You can listen to the soundtrack, and it's basically the entire musical. And so, like, Hamilton does that excellently. There is little that you miss in the story from listening to the soundtrack.
Man, fucking operas that are, like, alternative musical styles, like rock operas and any kind of, like, hip-hop opera, fucking amazing. Jesus Christ Superstar is, like, super my fave.
I appreciate Jesus Christ Superstar, but... Like, I for a long time, I only had the soundtrack, and I was bothered because I'm like, I know the story because Bible, but I, but, like, I don't get the story because of the soundtrack, you know? That being said, though, I also grew up on Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor soundtrack, or Amazing Technicolor soundtrack.
I've seen that one too.
I love that one. I feel like that one has a soundtrack that you can listen to and understand the story.
Speaking of Bible musicals, I haven't seen The Prince of Egypt in a long time, dude, but I have very fond memories of it, and so I would love to revisit it.
I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix or Hulu. It's streaming.
All right, we've gone wildly off track. Sorry this episode jumped around a lot.
You're not sorry at all. Rach, where can people find us?
You can find us at taztalk.tumblr.com, or you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can look us up on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter. Chelsea, do you want to tell us about that?
I was about to say, like, that's my thing.
I'm trying to think of a smoother way to transition us between these different formats instead of just, like, awkwardly pausing and waiting for you to, like, okay, and then, you know, like, there's got to be a better way to do this.
My cue to go is that you say, or to find us on iTunes.
And then I jump in and I say, you can also find us on Twitter. We are at TazTalkPodcast.
I think you should start from now on. I think you should go Twitter, Tumblr, Gmail.
God, that's weird. iTunes. Then you have to cue me in and say, hey, Chels, where can people find us? And then I'm like, oh, no.
We'll workshop it off air. All right. God. Until next time, everybody. Bye.